Welcome to another inspirational message from the chapel. We pray this message encourages and inspires you. If you would like any more information, check out our website, thechapelcollective.com.au.
This message I'm going to speak to you today, I'm going to start with Mark chapter 8 and verse 34. And this is Jesus speaking, first of all, speaking to the crowd. And that's a really important part for us to note because we're in an environment that really does care about people who don't know God and recognise that often in our environments that we gather that people are at all different stages of faith, all the way from just curious, all the way to really sold out. And so we never want to forget that and go to a point where we just preach stuff that people don't understand. But nor do we want to insult people's intelligence, because Jesus would call a crowd to himself and he would say really full-on things. And today, if you're getting baptised, this is something that you need to know before you get baptised. And if you are getting baptised, we'll give it an opportunity for you at the end of the message to go and get changed. So don't worry, don't stress about when do I have to go out, when do I need to get changed. I'll let you know and we'll give you some time to get changed to come back and get baptised. So Mark chapter 8 and verse 34, it says, "Then calling the crowd to join his disciples, he said, 'If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your soul?'" Now, we live in a very blessed society that even those who are worst off among us have so much more than many people around the world. And yet, we naturally want to get more. We want to increase our standard of living. It's a human way that we do. But Jesus is saying here, you could gain and gain and gain until you've got the whole world and you could end up losing your soul. And this would probably not be something that gets preached right at the jump of someone coming, you know, curious about faith. It might be not something that you would necessarily tell your friend straight up, but yet Jesus decides to tell people straight up. And he calls a crowd to himself. He says, I want to be really upfront with you. I want you to know that it's going to cost you if you want to follow me. Are you up for the cost?" And he says, because you could gain the whole world, but you could lose your soul. Jesus' whole life was about laying it down for others. He knew his whole mission on earth was to come and to lay down his life for us. He says in John chapter 10, verse 18, "No one can take my life from me. I sacrifice it voluntarily." We understand sacrifice. The time will come. Daz and I get Compassion Children every now and then. We sponsor Compassion Children. And our mark is that if we can no longer, we have to keep, as long as we can afford coffee, we need to keep getting a child, because the cost of a child is the cost of a couple of coffees a week to sponsor them. And so if we're still buying coffee and the Compassion team come, our commitment is that we get another Compassion child. Now, the day may come when we can no longer buy coffee, and then it will be, "Sorry, kids, you're on your own." No, that will not be the case. It will be that we'll need to sacrifice our coffee in order to keep on sponsoring children. And so you understand this. Perhaps you've done that in the past. You've said, "Okay, we're only going to have one subscription, and because we want to be able to help someone else somewhere else in the world, or we're going to cut down on this because we want to go on holidays, or we're going to cut down, we're going to sacrifice our holiday this year because interest rates have gone up and we want to keep our house and keep paying our mortgage." Whatever it looks like, we make sacrifices all the time. And these sacrifices incrementally increase depending on how much we care. So if you had a sick relative who needed a life-saving surgery that could only be done, say, in America, at some special hospital, you may sacrifice all the way to selling everything you have in order to send that relative to that hospital. You know you'd do it, right? Especially if it was your child. Some parents are shaking their heads. "Sorry, guys, you're on your own." Okay, no, you can take two of them as long as we keep the house. But we understand the idea of sacrifice. Daz preached on Good Friday about the Anzacs and how we honour the Anzacs because they laid down their life for their country. We understand sacrifice. When Jesus says, "I sacrifice my life voluntarily for you." And I want you to note that I just said that depending on how much we value the thing is how much we'll sacrifice for it. We sang a song and it can seem a little bit self-indulgent, but it's actually singing the truth that he looked at the cross and he considered us worth that much. That to me is crazy. It's actually the way that I came to be serious about God. I was in, I was out, I was all over the place. And then I said to my dad at the wood heap, actually when I was getting chips for the fire, "Dad, if Jesus died on the cross and no one ever came to him, would it have been for nothing?" And he said, "Yeah, but if just one person had have decided to follow him, he would have considered that worth it." And something went into my heart of, if I was that one person, that Jesus would have considered that worth it, that Jesus would care about me that much and he cares about you that much, and there's a whole lot more to it and there's a sovereignty you've got and all that stuff. But simplistically, he died and he laid down his life because he cares about you that much. The thing is that Jesus, all through his life, he didn't leave it at "I give my life to you." He continually told his disciples and the crowds and anyone who would listen, "You must lay down your life for others." That following me is not, "Hey, I give my life to you so that you can live your best life now. I give my life to you for you so that you may give your life for others." Is there anything in anyone, Lockie, I know this is going to be you, I haven't run it past you, but that stirs in you because of that. You're like, "Yes, I'm ready to give my life for others." There's some of us like that, right? That we watched Braveheart together last night. And I'd like William Wallace there with you all the way, like just rip my guts open. I will yell out freedom with my last breath. You know, I will, Tashy. You know, Desmond Doss on Hacksaw Ridge. I see myself lowering people. In reality, I probably chip a nail and freak out. But there's something that stirs in me at the idea of sacrifice. And yet sacrifice very often, laying our life down for others very often, is menial and it's mundane and it's changing kids' nappies and it's going to work and providing for the compassion kid that we have or whatever that looks like. It looks like it's not worth that much. It is very inglorious. And yet Jesus still calls us to it. I've been in church for a long time and I've watched people be able to come to church, outlast the songs, stand for all that time, sing, and nothing kind of stir in their hearts. And maybe that's you today, and I want to say that's okay. But I just want to say that we need to be aware of what Jesus said, that actually in order to follow him, we need to have an attitude of, though none go with me, yet still I'll follow. Though I get offended from those weirdos at church, yet still I'll follow you, Jesus. Though you know, I feel like I don't understand everything, yet still I'll follow you, Jesus. And something might stir in you when I'm talking about sacrifice and you'd be like, "No, Brian, like, come on, where's the positive side? Give us the positive side. Jesus said, I've come that you might have life and might have it to the full." But let's read that in context this morning. It says, "I've come that you might have life and have it to the full." Or as the NLT puts it, "My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life." And to our 21st century brain, we immediately contextualize that rich and satisfying life to something that makes us feel a whole lot better and makes our standard of living a whole lot better and allows us to give an inheritance to our kids. But Jesus goes on and says, "I give them eternal life." That's the full and rich life. "And they will never perish. No one can snatch them away from me." That is the full and rich life, is that you are safe in the arms of Jesus, though your life gets taken from you, that you're safe with him. "For my Father has given them to me and he is more powerful than anyone else. No one can snatch them from my hand. The Father and I are one." It's his definition of a rich and satisfying life, not ours. And I hope that you're glad about that, because your definition of a rich and satisfying life at 23 and now at 33, or now at 43, or now at 53, has changed so often across that time. And so if it was up to you, it is so changeable. And yet Jesus has got this big picture. God has this picture of eternity past, eternity present, eternity future. And he says, "I can give you that rich life that actually matters. It's a life that matters." So going to John chapter 13, when Jesus now has withdrawn from public ministry altogether and he's with his disciples constantly, he's just trying to impart to them what this is all about before he dies and rises again and goes to heaven. He's just laying it out for them. He's given really tough messages along the way. He's constantly reiterated to them, but now he's honing in, he's laser focused on what they need to get before he goes. And the first thing he does to do that is that he takes off his robe. Some scholars say strips to a loincloth, but who, what, regardless, it's the dress of a servant, appears before them as a humble servant or even a slave, and he washes their feet. And he says, as I've done to you, you guys do as well. So that's why we've got this water out, because Andrew has decided to follow Jesus by washing all y'all's feet. He wants to start with those who suffer with tinea and work his way back from that. Now, this is a symbol. This was a, because washing feet was the most, like, grossest and mundane thing that you could do. And Jesus says, there should be nothing that you won't do for your fellow man to raise them up, even if it means that you suffer a little bit. And then he goes on and he continues and he's telling them, I'm going to go, I'm leaving. And in John chapter 13, verse 36, it says, Simon Peter, he asked, Lord, where are you going? And Jesus replied, you can't go with me now, but you will follow me later. But why can't I come now, Lord? He asked. I'm ready to die for you. Jesus answered, die for me? I tell you the truth, Peter. Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you will deny three times that you even know me. Now, if I was Peter, I'm like, oh, harsh. But it happens. He denies three times that he knows Jesus before the rooster crows the next morning. And yet then we get to this end of what Jesus has done, what he said he'd do. He's died. He's risen again 3 days later, and he has appeared to many of the disciples. And in John 21, he's making breakfast for them on the beach. And it says in verse 15 that after breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, Peter replied, you know I love you. Then feed my lambs, Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, Peter said, you know I love you. Then take care of my sheep, Jesus said. A third time he asked him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said, then feed my sheep. I tell you the truth, Peter. When you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go. Jesus said this to let him know by what kind of death he would glorify God. Then Jesus told him, follow me. So Jesus, having just been crucified, with that image fresh in Peter's mind, he lets Peter know, Peter, you're going to die the same way, just letting you know. And then Jesus says, follow me. So here we have Peter over here who is like ready and fired up and good to go. And Jesus is like, Peter, calm down. You're not even going to follow me through this night. And then over here, he says to him, Peter, you're going to die for me. You actually are going to die for me now. You've learned from your mistakes. You've been through it and now you actually are going to do it. And so I want to ask you the question this morning, where is your set point? Because Peter was all impassioned and ready to go here. And Jesus is like, I'm sorry, Peter, first sign of trouble, you're going to cut and run. And over here, Peter's ready to die for Jesus again. And Jesus says, yes, you actually will. The worst kind of death and you're going to make it and you'll do it. And I wonder if we're not even to the Peter stage yet. If we haven't even decided to follow Jesus the first time, well, today would be a great day to decide to follow Jesus. But maybe we're somewhere along this spectrum. And there's a few people that are along this spectrum. One of them is some parents of a blind guy that got healed. This blind man, blind since birth. If you have a family member that has a disability and you know how debilitating that can be and the quality of life that is reduced because of that in some cases, then I believe that you would be with these parents in rejoicing like crazy if Jesus came along and healed your son of being blind. That he once had this way of life and he only had those potential prospects and now he is completely healed and has new life opened up to him. And yet, in the Bible, it says that they were there and Chloe or Phoebe, sorry, I forget who's on projection, but whoever's there, just roll those scriptures through behind me. Essentially, the parents say that they get questioned on it and they decide, no, I don't want to, we don't want to get questioned too harshly on this because we'll get put out of the synagogue. We're not willing to lose our social standing by standing up for Jesus, even though their son has been healed. Like, I find that mind-blowing, and yet I see the times that I was at a youth camp in high school and I was like, I'm living for you, Jesus, and get back to school and someone asked me where I was and I couldn't even tell them I was at a Christian youth camp because I was so embarrassed. And so those parents, I'll let them off the hook this time. There are other people there that are leaders, people, it says that many of them believed in Jesus, but they said that they wouldn't say that they would follow him because they didn't want to be put out of the synagogue. Where is your set point? There's another time that Jesus is talking and he gives a really hard saying. He says, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you can't be my follower. And a bunch of people are just like, that is too weird. We are out of here. And in hindsight, we know that it's the new covenant and it's the table of the Lord and it's a little bit of bread and it's a little bit of juice. It's not actually turning into flesh and blood and then we're eating and drinking it. But they didn't know that and they didn't know what he was talking about. And so a bunch of them left. And perhaps that's you this morning. You get to a point where you're like, well, I can't understand that about the Bible, or I can't understand that about the way that Christians do that. I don't get it. So at this point, I'm out. A bunch of people do that. A bunch of people fail to go where the disciples went that stayed when Jesus said that. And Jesus turns to them and says, what about you guys? And they went, well, where else are we going to go? You've got the words of life. And that's the kind of faith that Jesus wants, is that you don't have to understand everything. He doesn't want you to check your brain at the door. He wants you to search it out and examine it and ask questions and look for meaning. But if you don't understand, he doesn't want you to just go. He wants you to say, well, at the end of the day, God, I know that you are, that you're good, and I'll follow you no matter what. That is what faith looks like. And then obviously we know that at the point of the cross, they all deserted him. They all cut and ran. You might think, Bron, you're not making me feel too good because I've done a bunch of these and my set point's kind of really quite low as I look at my life. I just want to say to you, yes, okay, me too. I've stuffed it so many times. I've had so many opportunities where I've like just not gone there because I was worried about what people might think. I want to tell you, yes, me too. And gradually God has brought me along and brought me along just as I've stayed with him. I'm not where I need to be, but praise God, I'm not where I was. And he is into second chances. Peter deserted him. Peter gave in to a little servant girl. And yet Jesus came and cooked him fish on the beach for breakfast and asked him and gave him a second chance. Jesus is into second chances. Every single day when you wake up, he gives you a new opportunity to try again. Church, every now and then, it's just time to have a moment where you're like, I have decided to follow Jesus. And even though I've done so imperfectly to this point, I am determined that for all my days, I will follow him. I will follow him. Jack Haynes puts it like this. Today is a good day to die. It's a good day to die to the flesh, to the world, to myself, and to take up my cross and follow him. Paul puts it like this. I die daily. And Jesus puts it like this. When he called the crowd to join his disciples, he said, if anyone wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? I want to speak to some people in the room that the enemy has allowed you to think that you haven't got it in you. And I just want to call out of you that you absolutely do. Not by anything that you've done, not by how good you are, but by how good Jesus is. Lucas, I want to tell you this morning, you've got it in you. You've got it in you. You've got it in your church. You think like, oh, well, I just can't quite go there. Jesus does not want you to come to church, tick a box, go home and live your life. He wants you to live sold out every part of your life for him. He wants you to live on mission every single day. He wants you to walk through life with eyes that are like, Jesus, show me today. Who's my person of peace? Jesus, show me someone who needs to be spoken to. Jesus, just show me how to be me inside of this world, just showing your love and showing your joy. Let me be that. Who would say that they're like me and drawn to sacrifice? Like, tell me about how I'm going to lay my life down and I'm there. Lock, Nath, that's it. Oh, Carly, yes, Carly. You're there, you're good to go. There are three people in the room. God help us if there's a war, people. You're all stuffed. Apart from Carly, Locke and I, and we'll fight for you. Nath as well. Thanks, Nath. There is this idea of that some people, like, they rally at the thought of it. And other people, they can only see, or they largely see the cost, that that's too high, that that's going to take me out of my comfort zone. And yet, Jesus calls us to that place. Jesus talks about this merchant who found a pearl. And it was, so he was a person who sought out pearls, went looking for pearls. And he found this pearl, and it was so valuable that he sold everything he had to go and buy that pearl. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like that. It is worth your whole life. It is worth everything you have to seek that. And I wonder if the merchant, after a while, saw the pearl and went, oh, man, I miss my Netflix subscription. Like, it's great to have a pearl, but I love my 65-inch TV. Is that even big? 65-inch TV? 400-inch TV, I don't know. We're still, I'm surprised we don't have one with a box at the back. Ours is so old school. Like, I wonder if he ever went, oh, I shouldn't have sold everything. Like, look at it. It's not worth that much. Does the value of the pearl change? Has that pearl changed because time's gone by and the merchant's no longer that fussed on it? No, of course not. But yet sometimes us in our Christian life, we say, yes, I'll give all to follow you, Jesus. Yes, I'm with you. I see you taking ground. I see you press ahead. We're good to go. But after a while, it's like, oh, this isn't that shiny anymore. I'm just not feeling it. Has it changed? No, we've changed. And so I just want to call us back this morning. Like, let's just be called back to repentance. Let's just get called back to say, Lord, I've tried to take my soul back a bit, and I'm at risk of losing it if I keep just trying to increase my standard of living. And I don't want to, God. I'm going to ask the band to come now. And if you're going to get baptized, this is like literally your moment where you're saying, I am dying to my old life and I am rising again.
Hey again, thanks so much for joining us on this podcast. Whether you are new and exploring your faith or a follower of Jesus, there's a next step for you. There is always room to grow, more to be done, destiny to be pursued, and people to be reached. So what's your next step? To find out, head over to thechapelcollective.com.au. And thanks again for listening.